Hi there, you're listening to Camille Parle Sexe, your sexual wellness podcast. I am Camille Bataillon, clinical sexologist, and in this podcast, I want to give you la crème de la crème in sexology. With my guest or on my own, we will reflect together on sexuality, human relationship, and every aspect of intimacy to give you the best of sex education. I hope to inspire you in your intimacy and put some glitter in your sexuality. Alors, bienvenue! Wow, you're about to listen to an interesting conversation about porn. Porn conversation with Erika Lust. So for the people who don't know yet, who is she? Let me tell you. So her company is a company behind the acclaimed adult filmmaker Erika Lust. She changed and challenged the way we film, we think, we do porn movie. She advocates for the importance of paying for porn to ensure safe working condition and fair pay for sex workers. Erika Lust has three missions. The first mission is to ensure safe working condition and fair pay for sex workers, which is what she's doing with Erika Lust movies, that you have to pay for your porn. The second mission is with the Porn Conversation. It's a non-profit platform giving families and educators the tools to help open up the topic of porn to the younger generation. And third is for women to have more agency about sex, to be okay with their desires, to be okay to initiate sex. And this is also what she's doing with her movies. In this conversation, we are talking about connection, human connection, mindfulness, being aware, and also we're realizing that the less we talk about sex, the more dangerous things can happen in sex. So Erika is advocating for talking about sex. And I think her being on Camille Parle Sexe is just what was needed. So thank you again for Erika, and you will see this conversation is very much interesting. So please enjoy the show. I am really excited to welcome Erika Lust on the show. Erika, Lila from your team told me that it's your first participation in a French podcast. So thank you, what an honor. Thank you for your trust. So I want to say bienvenue Erika sur le podcast Camille Parle Sexe.
Merci bien.
Ooh, some French.
A little. Un petit peu.
So let's start with the real questions. Who is Erika Lust?
Well, that was an unexpected question. Who am I? Well, you know, there's a long story and then there's probably a short version of who I am. But I was born in Sweden. I studied political science. I moved down to Barcelona when I was in my 20s. And then I had a hard time to find a job working in political science. And I had always loved cinema, which was one of my big passions. And then I had friends who were working in cinema production, mostly in advertisement and some television, etc. And they said, you know, why don't you come and we can get you an easy job and you can start, you know, as a runner, as a driver, etc. And that's kind of how it happened. So I started to work in audiovisual production. I loved the ambient. I realized that I really loved working with film. I signed myself up to film school, started to learn a little more about, you know, the practical things working with cameras, and then more about script writing, more about working with performers, actors, directing. And then I had an opportunity to make a short film. And that was really the moment where I kind of, you know, got back to some of the ideas I had had back at university studying political science, where we had been talking a lot about gender structures, sexuality, feminism, kind of how we can change attitudes in society. And, you know, as any young adult, I obviously had been in contact with pornography. I think most of us have, definitely today, when we all know that the internet is, you know, on every screen in our pockets and on our desks and in our homes and all around us. And pornography has become mass media, really. It's out there, it's available, etc. When I grow up, it wasn't that available. I kind of had to look for it to find it. But still, I think that what I felt when I started to watch porn was that something wasn't really working for me. I had this feeling that I loved the idea of looking at exciting images and that these images were gonna kind of turn me on and put me in the mood. And I wanted to feel inspired by these images. That was really what I was looking for, actively looking for that. But then when I watched porn, I always had this feeling that it didn't really make it for me. I was too kind of upset and I was too worried about what was going on. I didn't really like the way it was presented. I didn't really like the aesthetics of it. I didn't like the characters. I didn't find them intriguing enough. I didn't see the game. It felt to me that most of the women, that they were reduced to some kind of sometimes beautiful object, sometimes more like a tool to male sexuality. But it wasn't about us. It wasn't about our stories. And I think that really made me feel left out. And when I started, you know, to talk to other friends around me, I realized that most of my male friends, they liked porn. They used porn. They had a good time with porn. Whether most of my female friends had a very kind of similar feeling that I had. And I guess being a student of political science into kind of gender structures and everything made me kind of see the structure in pornography, right? And I don't know if that was an answer of who it at last, but it was at least kind of the start of how I became Erica Last, because obviously from the beginning I was just Erica.
Yeah, and how you turn like your passions, you know, like filming and cinema into work, but also into a mission. And we're going to come back to your missions because you are doing this. Okay, it's a big industry, you know, but you are doing this for a purpose. And I think we need to talk about it. But first, so I see like how passionate, you know, you are about your work. And so what turns you on doing the work you do?
What turns me on? Well, I guess what turns me on is to turn on other people somehow. I'm a people pleaser in the end, you know. I want them to be happy. I want them to feel fulfilled. I love, you know, I've really, one of my favorite things in the world is, I mean, I have two. It's one of them is being on set because I really, really love the whole process of filmmaking. But the other one is being in a movie theater and watching the audience watching the films and then having, you know, the Q&As with them and listening to the questions and answering and kind of starting this debate about the possibilities of pornography. Because I think that for me, that is really what I think that porn can be so much more than what it is at this moment on the internet. I think that so many people have kind of reduced the possibility of porn in their minds because they think that somehow porn is supposed to be this chauvinistic genre that is not kind of not erotically stimulating, but just kind of for the moment arousement and satisfaction and kind of a quick fix in a kind of world full of anxieties somehow. But I do believe that porn really can, we cannot shy away from that pornography is, you know, is a media, that it's full of messages, that it tells us things about the world we live in. It tells us things about human sexuality, about interaction. And interaction, if we are talking about heterosexual porn, about interactions between men and women. So it's somehow, you know, statements about how we are supposed to act sexually, etc. And I get so frustrated sometimes when I see kind of the online tube site porn that's out there. And I feel that it's so full of harmful messages. It's so full of, you know, this sex sexualization of teens or the fetishization of race or how they divide us into kind of body parts, and suddenly it's all about, you know, what we look like, but not really about who we are. And obviously the systemic violence towards women that makes me sick. I feel very strong about it, and I'm very sad that it's transmitting so wrongful messages about how to treat each other sexually.
Yeah, and I can feel like, you know, you are saying like it makes you sick, and I can feel like, okay, porn, we know everyone almost had watched porn, and our kids will watch porn, and etc.
But at the same time, I do love porn, and as I said, I see this potential in it. So it's I'm not one of these people who is, you know, a porn hater and want to censure it and ban it and says that it's only evil and it's only bad. And, you know, I think that...
And that's why you wanted to reinventing porn, actually. You wanted to send different messages. And from what I hear from you is like, okay, mainstream porn is missing the lack of interaction, human interaction and connection, you know, and this is a reflection of our society, right? People are lacking connection, human touch, you know, and I feel like in your movies, what you are trying to do, like to have a story that shows also how the interaction are starting. You are showing body from far to really have a bigger vision of who are they and how they interact together. And I was saying for you know, your missions, you know, like from what I see, you have two missions: to first ensure safe working condition and fair play for sex workers with your company, and also to give families and educators tools for better sex education for the younger generation, as you said. So those are very two great missions and very essential.
And there's a third mission there also, obviously, which is, you know, bringing sexuality to women and others who haven't felt that we were in the center, that we had the right to, you know, enjoy our sexuality, etc.
Yeah, right. And this is exactly what you do, like to give also women in this, like, the power back to women in terms of, like, you know, really living their sexuality the way they want, to not feel ashamed of watching good porn, you know, and to enjoying it. And so why for you it's important? You already say a bit, but like really, like why for you these three missions are very important for you?
For obvious reasons, kind of. No, I believe, you know, when it comes to the educational part of it, it's very important because I am a mother. I have two kids, a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. I see them grow up in this world. I see how they are impacted by social media, by media in general. And obviously, as I said before, porn has become huge. It's out there on the platforms. We have given our kids technology. They have access to it. So few parents know how to, you know, put on parent control on all these devices. And even if you know, even if you are a very tech, you know everything about tech, you're a tech savvy person, etc., it's very hard to do it. That's the reality. And even if you do it, what happens when your kids go to their friend's house? Maybe their parents don't know how to do it. So it's not really a way of solving the problem.
Yeah. And to avoid the conversation, because you can put anything, you know, any safeguards and technology, but you are still not talking about it, like educate about it.
Exactly. So I see the world as it is. So, okay, now porn is out there. Some people, some companies have decided to put it out for everyone for free without any kind of payment barrier or age idea check or whatever. It's just open for everyone. Mm-hmm. And obviously our kids has that access. So me as a parent, I don't have a choice the way I see it. The only real choice I have is to have the conversation, is to talk to them about the impact of pornography, how I see it, what I like about it, and what I dislike about it. A very honest conversation. I think that most parents have these conversations about other topics. I mean, when we're talking about alcohol, for example, most parents, they have talked to their kids about alcohol. They have talked about smoking and drugs and food abuse, because that's also existing in this world, etc. And there's many, many topics as a parent that where you prepare your kids for the world. Mm-hmm.
In a scary way, usually. It's more like, don't do that, or it's bad, you know, porn is bad or smoking is bad, but not really talking about like actually to understand exactly what it is behind the scene. Or
but maybe France is one of those countries, for example, when we're talking about alcohol, who has a more kind of soft politics towards alcohol, where it's not only, you know, the kind of scary image of it, don't drink because you're gonna end up in hospital, you know, but that parents are more teaching their kids how to drink, and that it can give you a little pleasure if it's, you know, one glass of wine, etc., in small combinations. So that might be one example of doing it kind of differently, right? But for me here, when it comes to having this kind of sex talk or the porn conversation that I, you know, like to call it, because I that, and it's even a project, you know, that we have online. We have this site where parents and educators can go to find information on how to talk about pornography with the teens and kids, and educators can also access it. And it's not only about the conversation, there's also guides to sex education, because what I found out starting to talk to many parents was that they were lacking sex education because they didn't have it when they went to school. And now it's their turn to talk to their kids, and their kids are still not having it in their schools. So somebody has to kind of go in there and do it. And then it's also true that much of the sex education that we did receive was kind of, as you said, negative in a way, because it was to scare us about the fears of sex and the dangers and what could happen, and not to get pregnant and not to get an STI and kind of take care of us of this. But so few schools and parents have actually talked to the kids about the pleasure part, which is the main part of sex. Why
this is why we are doing it.
People are enjoying it and doing it, etc. So I do believe that we, to go back to kind of your question, I do believe that it's unavoidable that we don't have really an option here. We need to have these discussions. We need to realize that porn is out there, that it has become part of our culture, our society. It is mass media. It's transmitting messages. And if we don't help our kids to understand and break down those messages, they will be left to learn about sex from these porn tubes. Yes. Online. Mm-hmm. And then what do kids do? Well, you know, they want, I mean, it's especially when you're a teenager, you want to be seen as someone who kind of, who knows and who's cool and who's aware of the game. So then they take these messages out to their own life, and then they reproduce mm-hmm. what they have learned from these online tube sites, and they are trying to have sex the same way as they've seen the porn stars in these films having sex. And disappointingly enough for many of them, it's not really working, because these porn stars, you know, are professional workers. They know how to pose on camera. They know how to perform. Some of them are even taking medication to make them last longer, etc. And kids don't understand that sometimes. Oh, now I have a little dog coming up.
Ah, hello, dog.
Take her out.
Yes.
No, she talks a lot. So she
sorry. Here today it's only Erica talking, not a dog.
No dogs on the podcast today.
But you were saying, like, for young men or men in general, watching porn can give a lot of anxiety and a pressure of performing. And we see it as a sexologist. You know, we have this kind of men coming into our office saying, like, I can't get an erection. I'm not lasting any, you know, I don't last too long. I have a lot of stress. I need to perform. I'm young and I have erectile dysfunction. What's happening? I took medicine. It doesn't work.
They are supposed to be this penetrative sex machines going on. And then the way also they consume porn, so many people do it in a kind of non-mindful way. I think sometimes they don't really do it because they want the sexual stimulation, but they do it because they want to calm their anxiety somehow. The same way as many people, you know, open up bags of potato chips and they eat them, or they order fast food and they kind of eat, and then they feel bad about it because it's not the way of kind of mindfully doing it, you know. And with porn, I see it all the time that they open up, they go to these free tube sites because they haven't really thought about what these sites represent. And then they open up window after window after window, and it's just like impact. I want to see more, harder, stronger, more crazy things. And it's not kind of
fulfilling. Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking about connection and the lack of connection. And I think also the way we teach men how to connect to a partner, and maybe here female partner, but whatever partner, is about sex. The only way to connect with a partner is through sex. This is the way we teach them. And so when there's no sex, they are lost. They don't know how to connect, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. No, but I mean... Here, what we are lacking in our society in general, I think, is the skills to communicate when it comes to sex, is to be able to express how we feel and what we want and listen to a partner when they do the same. We need to become better at asking questions, and we need to become better at knowing ourselves. And at stop performing sex like it's like we are in a porn film and it's, you know, this kind of performance that we are giving, but instead doing it for our own pleasure, for how we feel, what we like, what feels good, that may differ for different people and may differ in different points in our lives also, because sex in the end is very kind of fluid and
it's an experience rather than a performance. And I think also,
but here again, we live in this society that is so kind of video oriented and social media oriented, and we all the time, we have kind of learned the last 10 years how to promote ourselves. So feel sometimes that instead of living the experience, having the experience, we're there because we are doing the show, because we are promoting how good we are, how we can, you know, satisfy our partner, or how we can, you know, be the
best lover, because it's my value. If I'm good at sex, you know, this is all my value. And it's super interesting. And in your mission, so we understand, there's Erica Lust Confessions, there's a porn conversation. And so we were talking about, like, to ensure safe working condition, or to show, like, also, you know, you were not necessarily talking about this, but like about the male gaze also in the movie. And here in your movies, I feel like you're trying to have a different approach, more female gaze, making sure, you know, the workers is concerned, there's a good salary. Like, can you tell us a bit more, like, why Erica Lust is different from mainstream porn?
Well, I think it's the only way of doing it, really. I want everybody who's working with me to have as unsafe experience as possible and as positive experience as possible. And to ensure that, to do that, I need to find the best possible working conditions. So the only way I can work with performers who are gonna, you know, perform explicit sex in front of the camera is making sure that they feel good. It's making sure so that I know who they are, what they need, what they want, what they don't want, etc. And how can I do that? Well, in conversations, that is the tool, the obvious tool that we have to get to know each other. So what the way we work is that we start long before we are actually shooting a film, we start that conversation with them. So when I, for example, have an idea to a film and I have a synopsis or a short script or something to tell or a mood board or something that I can show them, then I contact performers that I'm interested in working with, and then I ask them how they feel about this idea, if this is something that they would like to do and with whom they would like to do this. Because if I can get them to kind of give me their favorite partners, their favorite scene partners, their favorite co-workers, then I can ensure that I'm working with people who have good contact, respect, who like to work with each other, etc. But then, of course, sometimes I'm proposing people to work with each other who have never worked with each other before. But then, obviously, I ask them, and then I have meetings with them, me together with the performers and the intimacy coordinator for the shoot, where we kind of talk about the film. I present my ideas, they present themselves, they talk a little about their experience, and we make sure that we establish that connection between all of us so we can work in a safe ambient where everybody knows who the other people are and how they feel. And then when we move towards the shooting date, we keep on doing these check-ins, and they know that at any time, if they have any feedback or if anything changed, because we all know that things can change in our lives, then we will, you know, address that situation properly when it comes. And there are things happening, you know, a woman can suddenly have a candida infection, or, you know, things often happen, you know, and then we have to kind of see how can we change the story? Is it possible or is it not? And if we're looking at the situation where someone has an STI, etc., then of course they cannot shoot in that case, because we are testing all the performers, obviously. And then we would have to look for a substitute, but then we also do it in the same conditions, you know, talking to this performer, asking who would you like to work with, can we find the right partner, etc. Or if it's possible, can we change, you know, the way we are gonna show that sex scene, because we have to remember that not all sex is penetrative vaginal sex. There's lots of different ways of having sex.
Yeah. And through all this process, it's a mindfulness steps, as you were saying, and all about connection and communication. We are going back to the basis, but it's very important. And in your movie, you're trying to disrupt also the way of what we think about porn or we film porn. And we know that in porn, mainstream porn, there's like the money shot, you know, when like, okay, to make a success, you know, to make a porn movie, we need ejaculation. Is it something that you do also in your movie, or what are the differences?
For me, it's it depends totally on the situation. Yes, it's true that the audience likes to see an ejaculation, because for them it's somehow the feeling that it has happened, that it was there, you know. When it comes to female orgasms, for me it's very important to show them also. I always try to encourage my performers to, you know, have the best possible time, but then I always say that if it doesn't happen, don't worry, you know, because this is real life. Sometimes it happens, doesn't happen. It depends where you are and how you feel. So there's not the pressure, not on men and not on women, to get there. But obviously there is a feeling that it would be wonderful if we could reach, you know, that point. But then also when it comes to the scenes with male performers, it depends on the mood they are in, and it depends on every particular film, because they are showing different things. So sometimes it's an kind of inside cum shot that is being shown, because that's important for the story, or that's what feels right with those performers, or maybe they are a couple and, you know, something is. So it all depends a lot. It's difficult to put rules there. It's the same when we're talking about condom use. Sometimes we use condoms, sometimes we don't. It's normally left to the performers to decide.
After being tested, right.
Exactly. And obviously after having seen, you know, they always see each other's test results and everything is, you know, very organized. And I have to say that so many people have prejudices about, you know, porn performers or porn stars, or that them being kind of promiscuous people from poor circumstances without any other possibilities in life. And that is far from my experience. The people that I have met during my years in this industry, most of them have been absolutely fabulous people, you know, really caring about their health, about, you know, their what they eat, how they treat other people, about having all these conversations, you know. They get tested regularly, so many more times than just any person that you could meet in a bar during, you know, nighttime, that normally people don't even ask about, you know, their sexual kind of background and health situation at the moment. And you know, the people who plan for their future, and most of them kind of, you know, are very organized with their careers, and they save their money and they invest, and they know that these careers will probably end at some time, because it is an industry where you have an easier time to work if you are a young person, because the industry as a whole is asking for, you know, for young people to participate, especially. For me, for example, who's looking for performers a little more of age, I'm struggling a lot to find, you know, to find just kind of adult people who are, you know, still in this industry, who are active, etc. So sometimes I work with professional performers, sometimes I work more with people who are, you know, kind of erotic artists. They might be in the scene, but they are not kind of, their main job might not be, you know.
And yeah, because I was like, if there's one person, or at least one of the person who can reinvent porn and showing like the diversity of bodies and being like, not about young people have a sexual life, because as you were saying, like porn is a representative of a society. And if we only see young people having sex, we just think like, oh, when you are young, you're having sex. When you are older, you don't have sex. And I think showing also like older porn actor having sex and in a different, you know, different way, and also showing, I don't know if you do also this kind of things, but it could maybe help people against anxiety, but to show that sometimes sex is messy. Sex sometimes, okay, it's not all about erection, and if we lose erection, it's fine, we can do other things, you know.
Yeah. And sometimes a performer leaves because he needs to go to the bathroom.
Nice.
And you know, these are realities, and they are happening, and sometimes there's weird sounds, and sometimes, you know, a bed falls, and sometimes we laugh, and there are breaks. Yes, we try to incorporate. It also depends on the film and the scene and the situation, of course. But what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to show, sometimes we're talking about the difference between realistic and relatable, because some people say that I always show realistic sex, and then I try to say no, but it's relatable, I think it's a better word somehow, because I do show things also that are fantasy based, etc. But what is very important for me is that the sex should feel real. It should feel like something that real people would do, how they connect with each other, etc. I don't want it to feel kind of to feel posed, or to feel, I want it to feel like it's people having sex without the camera. The camera is just there to, you know, to capture what is happening. But it's for me, it always, I tell performers kind of to try to depornify themselves before, you know, before shooting a scene, to kind of get rid of, you know, the postures and the images and the separation.
But you see here you said performers. Maybe it could be a different vocabulary, you know, to call them.
Yeah. But they are, but I mean, even if they are performing in a natural way, they are obviously performers. Because it's not, you know, it's not amateur sex shot in your bed. You are in front of people who work with me. I always prepare them for what they are going to expect when they come to set, because we work with a big film team. We are, you know, 30 people, sometimes 40 people behind the camera. This is a big set. This is, you know, a serious camera. We work with Alexas, you know, there's a whole film crew, a lighting crew. There's the whole process, and that can be very scary to some people who are not used to, you know, be in front of all these people. So I always try to make it as an intimate experience as possible, you know, sometimes putting up big kind of blackouts and only the crew that really needs to be in front of the performers are there, you know. But still, if you count the people who needs to be there, then you have, you know, camera operator, focus puller, you have sound people with, you know, both, you have still photographer, you know, and then some people running in and out because they need to fix something, because art might have to, you know, pick up something, or something is falling, or we see a background that we shouldn't see, or something, you know. So that's the reality of a shoot, you know.
That's the reality of a shoot. And I was wondering, what is the challenge? Because so the people who work for you, like so actors, performers, they also probably works in a mainstream porn industry. So what are the challenging, if you know, like when they work for you, like do they face any challenge? Because it might be very different experience as well.
Yeah, but I don't know if they see it so much as a challenge. I think they see it more as sometimes a reward or like a good experience, because they love, I mean, they normally they tell me how much they like to feel, you know, the whole ambient of being on a kind of real film set, of being respected, of being treated in a very kind of, you know, caring way, of knowing that they have always someone kind of to talk to, and the food that they need, and, you know, and from what I hear from many performers is that they are very proud of the work that we are doing, you know. It's films that they feel that they can show to their families. I have, you know, this performer I worked with a few times saying, you know, Eric, I always show your films to my mom, because it's like, you know, she goes like, yes, my son is an actor and he's there. And it's like, it feels
proud.
It feels exactly. And I feel that people in the end, we are all looking to feel important and to be a part of something, right? I mean, when you listen to stories and you hear what it is like working in the mainstream porn industry, I mean, sometimes it's not that bad, obviously. Some companies are really great and take care of the performers. And I think that the last years, especially since Me Too, et cetera, the industry has really tried to professionalize itself and the way they are working with performers. More companies, I'm talking about the kind of serious adult industry, they have incorporated, you know, intimacy coordinators, talent managers, right of bill of rights for the performers, better connections, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that this, it's also important to remember when we're talking about the porn industry, that part of it is obviously bad apples, but the same way as any kind of industry. You know, the model industry is not different. Hollywood is not different. We've seen on the highest level how people have suffered and how they have treated, especially, you know, women, etc. And in the porn industry, we have to remember that sex is what we negotiate with. So sex is out in the open. It's what everybody, you know, knows and put their limits and boundaries and kind of, it's not what is happening under the table.
And in your movie, you are really showing also like women being, you know, women agentivity towards sex, to be, you know, free about their sex life or being okay with that. And I have to tell you, when I work with my clients on desire and especially female clients, I obviously work first on all the blockage that can slow down, you know, their libido. But when we work on this and when they need a boost for themselves by exploring erotic content, I recommend them to watch Erica Lust, obviously, movies. And even for me in postpartum, it was great to watch it just to, you know, awaken my desire. It just like poof, like a fire. And my question is, why should sexologists, because we have a lot of sexologists listening to the show, should recommend erotic porn movies to their clients?
Because I feel that it has movies, erotic movies, if they are well done and they're ethically done and you can feel that you can kind of trust what you are looking at, then they have this possibility of showing you the diversity of human sexuality, which is, you know, something that we are all kind of wondering about and thinking about and wondering if we are different and if we are strange and if our desires are acceptable and how other people kind of relate to them. And I think that one of the wonderful things with cinema in general is that you can watch the story with characters and then you can empathize with them and you can really kind of get to understand how they live the world, their world, and what turns them on and how they kind of experience their erotic journey somehow. And I think that that can be very, very inspiring, especially for women who have felt that they didn't really have the right to their sexuality, that their sexuality has been about pleasing others, but not really about, you know, finding our own desires. So for me, just watching other women having pleasure, taking initiative, actively touching themselves, that helps me a lot. Seeing different women having different kind of experiences of orgasms. Some are very, you know, quiet and slow. Some are loud and multiple and goes again. Some are ejaculating. Some are, but just kind of seeing these different experiences, it helps me to relate to who I am and what I expect from myself. And I think that also we are talking obviously a lot about women because it's a kind of main part of my work and the reason why I started to do this, because I really felt that there was very few things for us out there. But then during the years, it has become something that is more than just kind of for women for me, and because it has definitely, my project has expanded to include kind of diversities of sexuality, to include queer people, to include, you know, everybody who felt kind of left out from the heteronormative male cis driven pornography that's out there. And what I kind of have wanted to do is to give opportunities and give voice to other people. So these films that we are making in my company is not only films directed by me, but films directed by a community of a diverse group of creators who are, you know, telling their stories of their sexualities. And I think that that is really the beauty in it, that you can find, you know, you can find someone who can represent you and what you feel and your gaze. And I think that this is what we need to balance. I mean, we are not close to a balance, because obviously that porn that we are talking about is the main porn that's out there. So I think, but at least this kind of independent, different, ethical, feminist, whatever we want to call it, porn, you know, author-driven, cinematic, blah, blah, blah. We can find 100 different terms and words to describe it. But that kind of porn is is coming up. It's, you know, I've seen it during my almost 20 years in this industry now. I've seen how more creators are joining the scene, how new film festivals, small film festivals are popping up. We are, you know, going out with doing events in different countries, in different cities, meeting kind of the audience and showing that cinema, this kind of cinema belongs in the cinemas also, you know, and that there's a wonderful experience really when you can share it with other people and see their reaction and kind of normalize the idea of sex being part of our life and the world we live in, because I'm also struggling a lot with the sex negativeness that is happening at this moment out on the internet, the banning of sex positive voices on social media. I had an account with 500,000 followers. It was banned last year, not because I was, you know, publishing explicit images, because obviously I was not. I was following the rules, at least the way I interpreted the rules. But the problem here is that all these social media, they are owned by a group of men who are, you know, cis hetero men with a very normative vision of what sexuality is supposed to be. And they accept anything that is kind of where women are being sexualized, etc. Sexist images are not the problem for them. But as soon as we kind of start showing our gaze and the way we want to see sex represented in images and on screen, then they don't understand it anymore and they ban it. They find it dangerous somehow.
Yeah, and dangerous also for, yeah, as you say, like for the freedom of women, like, you know, talking about sex, as you were saying, you know, like in your movies, you're trying to make people, other people also writing the content and stuff, then it's like to ensure the diversity of bodies, the diversity of stories, and anyone can relate, because if we give the opportunity of so many people to talk about sex and to talk about their fantasies, we can see and touch the different fantasies and see like, oh wow, sexuality is much more broader of what I was thinking.
And it's obvious we need to become more inclusive.
More inclusive.
Everybody, me included, you know, but at least when you realize it, then you start working towards it. The problem with this little group of this kind of powerful tech guys is that they are not realizing it. They are not, and if they realize it, then they only do it to show off somehow, but they don't really care about others. They only care in the end about their money and their power, and that's what they want. And the problem I see with porn in general at this moment is that something very similar is happening. You know, I call it big porn. These big companies like MindGeek, I don't know if they sound, if you heard of them before, but MindGeek is the owner of most of these tube sites that's out there on the internet showing all this free porn to everybody, including our kids, without any kind of responsibility, because they are not interested in it. They are not even interested in porn or in sex, because it's just what they use to drive traffic so they can sell advertisement. That's what they are about. This is big porn, no difference from big food or big pharma or all these industries that are conglomerates.
It's all about money and not about the consequences or human connection.
No, not at all. So I think that we as consumers, we need to stop being stupid. We need to, you know, to become responsible. We need to take responsibility somehow. We need to look at, you know, who are they and how are they doing their stuff, etc. Are they doing it respecting others? Because if they're not, I don't want to support them. I don't want to go there. And I think that it's fascinating to see how people, when we take out this conversation to society, you know, when I participate in a show or a podcast or an article, etc., and people start reading and seeing this world, because the porn has been so, you know, so in the dark, so in the closet, so nobody's really talking about it. So they had the opportunity to become this kind of big company without people realizing or criticizing or acting on what they are doing. But the more we take power, the more we talk about it, then the more people will see what is going on and will change. Because I do believe in people. I do believe in our capability of when we start, when we open our eyes, when we start seeing, then we are willing to do better. And I see lots of times I receive, you know, emails from men kind of trying to joke with me a little, and they go like, Erica, you destroyed porn for me. And then, you know, they smile and they say, you know, I went to these tube sites before because it was easy. They were access. Exactly. They were there. And then I just, you know, I used them. And then I read this interview with you, and then I started to see things that I hadn't seen before, you know, and suddenly I was watching this video and it said, tiny teen is getting destroyed. Whoops. And I said to myself, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I don't want to support these people, you know?
Yeah, because you awaken them. And in session is the same. Like some man comes and say, okay, I used to watch porn. I'm still watching mainstream porn, but I feel guilty because I don't want to watch this. How can I do? So there's a lot of awareness also for men towards their consumption.
No, and if we really want to change the system, is if we want big change, then we're going to have to talk to the men. We cannot do this, you know, thinking that we are a few women and queer people who are not happy with what's out there. We need to reach them. We need to get into their core. So I think that porn is an excellent tool, a political tool, to get into, you know, their center of male entitlement, mm-hmm. where they feel that they are safe and they live in this bubble where they still can express kind of sexist ideas about women, and they have right to that because it's just fantasy and it's just porn and it's just, you know. And if we get in there and we say, no, this is not okay, we want, you know, then I think we have a possibility of changing things profoundly in society. So for me, you know, I some people say, oh my God, Erica, what a long way. You know, you started with political science and now you're doing porn. And I say, yes, I'm doing porn, but it's still a tool for me. It's a political tool of, you know, change in the world and in society. That's the way I see it.
Wow, amazing. And it's been already 50 minutes we're talking about it, and there's so many things to talk about it. But okay, I don't want to take much more of your time, but like the few words I wrote during our conversation is like, the less we talk about sex, the more dangerous it is. And porn can be a way of changing, but deep change is not only like, oh, it's a passion or it's fantasy. No, we can change the structure of the dynamic of interaction between humans, connections, and in a mindfulness way.
No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay. But it's hard for people to see it, you know, and also it's hard. Many times it's hard for feminists to see it because they're still this kind of they have this idea that pornography is against women and that it's that there's this male entitlement always in pornography. But in the end, I think what we need to see is that porn is media. It's, you know, it's a form of something, but the messages, it's us, the creators, who decides what messages we want to send out. The same way as if we're doing a TikTok, we decide what message we have in that TikTok. Or if I'm doing a post on Instagram, there's a message behind what I'm, you know, telling the world about myself or and my life and
yeah, or me inviting you on this podcast. It's a message of like, you know, like people will listen to it and maybe we'll have a, you know, awareness of this and people, you know, people will be super excited to hear you, like French people, you know, like they start to knowing you, your work, what you're doing. And I know a lot of them are very grateful for the work you are doing. I am grateful for the work you are doing. What do you would like to share to the French audience? What do you would like to tell them?
I would like to tell them also, because we know that the French audience, it's maybe a generalization, but they love cinema, you know, they That's the way it is, you know. This is what we know about the French people. It's cheese and it's wine and it's cinema.
And sex. So,
exactly. So I would also like to say that these are films where we care about the cinematic quality in it, where we care about how we are telling these stories, how we are showing it. We care about the locations. We care about the style. We care about the whole experience. So I, for me, that was one of the things, you know, when I started to watch porn that also kind of went against my value somehow, that I felt that it was so ugly so many times and that I wanted to get into this kind of beautiful world of excitement and seduction and that's, you know, part of what I'm trying to create with this film, these films.
Yes, and we thank you for that, and we thank you also for, you know, the younger generation to watch maybe better quality porn, because the question is not are they gonna watch or no, they're gonna watch porn, so let's offer them quality porn.
That's another thing we have to tell people, that, you know, that most parents, they go, you know, I know that people are watching porn, but my kids, they're so good. They're not watching it. I would say, you know, don't ever think that. Don't be naive, because look at the statistics. We know that, you know, this goes down early in the ages, 9 years old. They are already starting to watch it. Maybe not watch it regularly. Maybe this is just something they stumble upon, but they talk about it. 12 years old, 50% of the population have already watched porn. 15 years old, we're getting up to almost 90% of the population. And it's not only boys, eh? Girls are, you know, watching. So as a parent, talk to them, show them that, don't shame them, don't, you know, don't make it a big fuss or anything. Just take it as granted that they are watching it. And then just, you know, tell them how you feel about it. That you are open to talk about it, that if they have questions, that you are willing to answer their questions. That's the only thing kids really want. They want to know that their parents are there for them.
Let's talk about sex. Thank you, Erik Ellis. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.